When a black man rapes a black woman, no act of aggression against a white male has been committed, and so the man's right to rape will be defended. It is very important to remember that most rape is intraracial, that is, black men rape black women and white men rape white women, because rape is a sexist crime. Men rape the women they have access to as a function of their masculinity and as a signet of their ownership. Cleaver's outrage at the historical fact of how the white man has used the black woman is wrath over the theft of property which is rightly his. Similarly, classic Southern rage at blacks who sleep with white women is wrath over the theft of property which rightly belongs to the white male. In the Notre Dame case, we can say that the gender class interests of men were served by determining that the value of the black football players to masculine pride, that is, to the championship Notre Dame football team, took priority over the white father's very compromised claim to ownership of his daughter. The issue was never whether a crime had been committed against a particular woman. What are the root causes of rape? Rape is the direct consequence of our polar definitions of men and women. Rape is congruent with these definitions. Rape inheres in these definitions. Remember, rape is not committed by psychopaths or deviants from our social norms. Rape is committed by exemplars of our social norms. In this male supremacist society, men are defined as one order of being over and against women, who are defined as another, opposite, entirely different order of being. Men are defined as aggressive, dominant, and powerful. Women are defined as passive, submissive, and powerless. Given these polar gender definitions, which are enforced by every institution in this society, it is the very nature of men to aggress sexually against women. Rape occurs when a man who is dominant by definition takes a woman who, according to men and all the organs of their culture, was put on this earth for his use and gratification. Rape, then, is the logical consequence of a system of definitions of what is normative. Rape is no excess, no aberration, no accident, no mistake. It embodies sexuality as the culture defines it. As long as these definitions remain intact and enforced by social institutions, that is, as long as men are defined as sexual aggressors and women are defined as passive receptors lacking integrity, men who are exemplars of the norm will rape women. In this society, the norm of masculinity is phallic aggression. Male sexuality is, by definition, intensely and rigidly phallic. A man's identity is located in his conception of himself as the possessor of a phallus. A man's worth is located in his pride in phallic identity. The main characteristic of phallic identity is that worth is entirely contingent on the possession of a phallus. Since men have no other criteria for worth, no other notion of identity, those who do not have phalluses are not recognized as fully human. In thinking about this, you must realize that this is not a question of heterosexual or homosexual. Male homosexuality is not a renunciation of phallic identity. Heterosexual and homosexual men are equally invested in phallic identity. They manifest this investment differently in one area, the choice of what men call a sexual object. But their common valuation of women consistently reinforces their own sense of phallic worth. It is this phallocentric identity of men that makes it possible, indeed necessary, for men to view women as a lower order of creation. Men genuinely do not know that women are individual persons of worth, volition, and sensibility, because masculinity is the signet of all worth, and masculinity is a function of phallic identity. Women, then, by definition, have no claim to the rights and responsibilities of personhood. Wonderful George Gilder, who can always be counted on to tell us the dismal truth about masculinity, has put it this way, and I quote, "Unlike femininity, relaxed masculinity is at bottom empty, a limp nullity. Manhood at the most basic level can be validated and expressed only in action." End of quote. And so, what are the actions that validate and express this masculinity? Rape. First and foremost, rape. Murder, war, plunder, fighting, imperializing and colonializing, aggression in any and every form and to any and every degree. All personal, psychological, social, and institutionalized domination on this earth can be traced back to its source, the phallic identities of men. As women, of course, we do not have phallic identities. And so we are defined as opposite from and inferior to men. Men consider physical strength, for instance, to be implicit in and derived from phallic identity. And so for thousands of years, we have been systematically robbed of our physical strength. Men consider intellectual accomplishment to be a function of phallic identity. And so we are intellectually incompetent by their definition. Men consider moral acuity to be a function of phallic identity. And so we are consistently characterized as vain, malicious, and immoral creatures. Even the notion that women need to be fucked, which is the a priori assumption of the rapist, is directly derived from the specious conviction that the only worth is phallic worth. Men are willing or able to recognize us only when we have attached to us a cock in the course of sexual intercourse. Then, and only then, we are for them real women. As non-phallic beings, women are defined as submissive, passive, virtually inert. For all of patriarchal history, we have been defined by law, custom, and habit as inferior because of our non-phallic bodies. Our sexual definition is one of masochistic passivity. Masochistic because even men recognize their systematic sadism against us. Passivity, not because we are naturally passive, but because our chains are very heavy, and as a result, we cannot move. The fact is that in order to stop rape and all of the other systematic abuses against us, we must destroy these very definitions of masculinity and femininity of men and women. We must destroy completely and for all time, the personality structures, dominant active or male, and submissive passive or female. We must excise them from our social fabric, destroy any and all institutions based on them, render them vestigial, useless. We must destroy the very structure of culture as we know it, its art, its churches, its laws. We must eradicate from consciousness and memory all of the images, institutions, and structural mental sets that turn men into rapists by definition and women into victims by definition. Until we do, rape will remain our primary sexual model, and women will be raped by men. As women, we must begin this revolutionary work. When we change, those who define themselves over and against us will have to kill us all, change, or die. In order to change, we must renounce every male definition we have ever learned. We must renounce male definitions and descriptions of our lives, our bodies, our needs, our wants, our worth. We must take for ourselves the power of naming. We must refuse to be complicit in a sexual social system that is built on our labor as an inferior slave class. We must unlearn the passivity we have been trained to over thousands of years. We must unlearn the masochism we have been trained to over thousands of years. And most importantly, in freeing ourselves, we must refuse to imitate the phallic identities of men. We must not internalize their values, and we must not replicate their crimes. In 1870, Susan B. Anthony wrote to a friend, and I quote, "So while I do not pray for anybody or any party to commit outrages, still I do pray, and that earnestly and constantly, for some terrific shock to startle the women of this nation into a self-respect which will compel them to see the abject degradation of their present position, which will force them to break their yoke of bondage and give them faith in themselves, which will make them proclaim their allegiance to woman first, which will enable them to see that man can no more feel, speak, or act for woman than could the old slaveholder for his slave. The fact is, women are in chains, and their servitude is all the more debasing because they do not realize it. Oh, to compel them to see and feel, and to give them the courage and conscience to speak and act for their own freedom, though they face the scorn and contempt of all the world for doing it." End of quote. Isn't rape the outrage that will do this, sisters? And isn't it time? Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. That was very, very powerful and very compelling. I can't imagine how anyone could have heard that without starting to rethink some of those basic assumptions. We're going to be taking phone calls. The number here is 371-5200. We will be taking phone calls from women only. The space on this program is every woman's space. It's a space for the energy of women to flow from us to the women out there. If there are male listeners who wish to contribute anything at all, I would very much enjoy your writing to me, but please don't call. And if you do call, we'll probably go on to the next call, definitely. The number again is 371-5200. And while we're waiting for the first calls to come in, I just want to announce something very important that's coming up, which is on August 4th, Wednesday night, August 4th. I'm going to read from the flyer. On Wednesday night, August 4th, you don't have to be afraid. How many times have you wanted to take a walk at night and didn't because you were afraid? How many times have you asked a man to accompany you only because you were afraid? What are you afraid of? On Wednesday night, a coalition of 20 groups in the New York City area is holding an unprecedented women's walk against rape in Central Park. As many women who can come to this will be really, really a memorable event. It's going to be one of the only times that we can walk through the park. And we're going to be making a very, very strong statement about the fact that we want to have that right. Yes, we have a phone call. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello, yes. I thought that that was fantastic. I thought the broadcast, I've never heard anything like it before. I'm not sure, what was the woman's name who was speaking again?
Andrea Dworkin, and she's sitting right here in the studio with me. Why don't you just speak directly to her?
I thought that that was just fantastic. There's no other word for it. And it was so analytical and so precise. It got right to the point, and it was just so looked into. And it was just—it's just indescribable. I just thought that it was so, so great that something like that was. It's just too bad that it's so. It hasn't been done sooner, and we're all sort of victimized by this. By this male domination. I know I myself am a part of it. It's really disgusting, but I, even to this day, I sort of feel that, you know, the way you're supposed to, if you, you know, into a middle class society, you're supposed to marry, you know, a muscular guy, or, you know, at least a very masculine guy, and, you know, take a submissive role while he goes out and you know, he's the breadwinner, and it's really, it's disgusting. It's what provokes most of this rape, you know, syndrome, I guess you would call it. And I'd like to know, how did you go about your research on this? Because I can tell that there was an immense amount of studying on your part, Andrea. I really do believe that.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for what you said. First, I read feminist sources, which I think it's very important to say. I think that you get the real raw knowledge of any experience from feminist sources. And, of course, I think that whenever women talk, one of the things, if they're speaking the truth, that they talk about first is rape. And so there are my experiences and the experiences of all the women I've ever talked to. And then you read the male sources that defend rape, that romanticize it, that think it's wonderful, that say it's terrific, the best thing that could happen to you ever in your life. And I think that there are a great many women now in the movement who are doing a lot of work on rape. A lot of work is being done, both practical and organizational and more theoretical. And, you know, I certainly would encourage everyone to both to do the reading of everything that's available and also to educate oneself by getting in touch with your local rape crisis center, by women who are organizing against rape, which is happening in many, many places.
Oh, I would like to ask you a very, very, I know this is a very simple question, but I think it's also very important. How many women do you think you'll actually reach? I mean, I think it probably angers you to no end to know that women just want to play this very passive role and want to be dominated. I've been through that, and I myself, if now I feel like I'm very unique, I don't want that anymore. But at one time, I thought that this was the way, and this is the only way, because that's the way I've been brought up.
Right.
But I mean, I would assume that the majority of women would lean more towards the passivity, you know, type of relationship, the role-playing type of relationship.
Well, I think you know, you're asking a good question, in the sense that the truth is the truth. I mean, the fact is that women are a deeply and horribly oppressed group of people, and therefore a very ignorant group of people. I think we all have to say that about ourselves, because it's true. And the work of any feminist who wants to change the situation and who doesn't want to live in slavery and fear is to change the willingness of women to be slaves. I think that's our primary work. Yes, it doesn't anger me. It hurts me deeply. But the only thing that I or any other woman can do is to keep talking, keep working. I mean, what else are we going to do? Because we either change it or we die. So.
Yeah, I'd like to say that I think the first thing that has to happen is what you just said, for us to understand that the ways that we are oppressed, that we are actually slaves, that there is a class that is oppressing us, and we are an oppressed class. And this, sometimes it's amazing how many women I talk to who don't seem to have an understanding of that, or will resist it when I present it.
Exactly.
That we're colonized.
It drives me berserk. I mean, it's just like the worst thing. But if you notice, the women that you probably confront are those with a high school education or less. I mean, they haven't really, I don't believe that they really have too much going for them to begin with. I think the majority of people who will really accept what you're saying are those who are college educated.
Well, that has not been my experience. I have to say, I've spoken many places, especially on the East Coast, to all different kinds of women, of all classes and all races. And I think that one of our problems as a movement, you see, is that we tend to talk ideology when we should be talking common experience. And my experience, especially in talking about rape, has been that whatever room I go into that's full of women, wherever they come from, first of all, there are an astonishing number of women sitting in the room who have been raped, who start to sweat, who start to tremble, who start to cry, who want to scream, all of that. And that, secondly, every woman understands rape when she's given the space in which to understand it.
Right.
Part of our problem is that we never seem to have the means for creating the spaces in which women can confront and understand their own truth. I don't think that what you say about education is true here.
Oh, I would tend to disagree with you, since lower is the how do you put this? The lower the income, or even just the lower class of people, tend to role play more than the wouldn't that be true?
No, that's not true.
Not true.
What is true is that women of different classes act out their slavery, sometimes in stylistically different ways. But what tends to happen to them, the acts of brutality committed against both upper, middle, and lower class women are exactly the same. And that's what people don't understand. Most people think that upper class women aren't oppressed. They are.
What I'd like to do now is to go on to another phone call, because we have a number of calls waiting in very few minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Yeah, WBAI, you're on the air. Hello? WBAI, you're on the air. Okay, we'll better go on to the next call. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes, I would like to comment, and if I could, since the time is so short, in one way I'd like to throw out some possibilities from the other side, because I think you were quite right when you were talking about thousands of years of experience and history, you know, because... you know, man, and I mean male man himself, has reacted throughout recorded history to the conditions of his life as well. And that many men, for instance, have committed suicide or died because they feel controlled by their passions. Do you know what I'm saying? And also that when you're talking, you talk as though the plan of the oppression of women was a thing that was consciously planned out and blueprinted by men and that they consciously went out to do this to women. And if you take that point of view, then you lose the efficacy of your argument. And I'm very much for your argument. I believe what you do, but I don't believe that it took place and happened historically in exactly the way that it comes through. I feel that history and the conditions of life in which man himself has been terribly frustrated and therefore is controlled by his passions many times, because those are his biological attributes, you know, just like we all have human attributes, and we have the need to meet challenge, and we have the need to get angry and respond to dangerous situations, and therefore in the frustrations many of these things are manifested against the nearest target, which happen to be the household and the women or the children or whatever.
But you yourself speaking now, you are the target. We are. We women are the half of humanity that the other half that men have visited their aggression and their anger and their uncontrollable passion against all of these thousands of years.
I'm agreeing with you, but I'm saying that it wasn't a consciously thought out thing, and that many women take their revenge by doing exactly the same thing against men. And what I'm trying to say is, until we understand how this came about historically, we are just going to turn into man-haters and throw away half the human race. And I don't believe that that's the solution.
All right. I'll try to speak to this in some way.
I hope you will.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. I'll be listening always. And I think it was wonderful research.
Well, okay. Stay on the phone just till I answer you, okay? First of all, I myself don't believe that these... That this is biologically caused and rooted. I see no evidence to that effect. I think that
man was an impotent unless he was in sexual action, which is a biological act, that he was an impotent and felt himself inferior as long as he wasn't in action, and that he projected.
No, George Gilder said that.
But you quoted it.
Yes,
and it's true. You see, but it wasn't a consciously planned out oppression against women. It was a historical development under the conditions in which the human race had to meet its environment. And we're in a very different age, which is reflected by the very fact that you have done this research and are presenting such a wonderful analysis. And unless you understand that, you can't even understand the value of your own analysis.
Right. We're probably, Andrea, do you want to answer that briefly?
I confess to my ignorance then about the value of my own analysis. I mean, I was in the middle of a sentence. I don't think that the causes of the situation that we're in are biological. I think that they're cultural. I think that the individual acts in male culture that contribute to a justification and romanticization of rape are all conscious acts. A man sits down to write a book, he does it consciously and deliberately. When an individual man sets out to rape, he does it 71% of the time consciously and deliberately. In general, the class interests of men, which are protected by law and by the organization of society, those things are organized and legislated consciously and deliberately. Excuse me, I'm not done. Consciously.
I'm not going to interrupt you. I just wanted to say, would you talk about the average man, not just the individual aberrant man who gets up and rapes?
The average man
is the man who gets
up and rapes. That is the terrible, bitter, and horrifying truth.
Right. We're going to have to go off phone calls now, I'm afraid, because the time for the show is woefully inadequate. We have no time left, and we've just begun to talk. Andrea, I'm sorry that we can't sit here for another hour taking phone calls. I thought that the one point that we just made at the end of that phone call was one of the most important of your paper, which is that the rapist is not a psychopath. The rapist is the boy next door. The rapist is a normal, well-adjusted heterosexual man if he's raping women.
Yes.
And this is very important to know. Next week on Every Woman's Space, we're going to have a second program on violence against women. We're going to be centering in more next week on what happens when women fight back. I hope that you'll listen in. Andrea, thanks. I wish we had another hour, but thank you so much for coming. And we'll close with a theme song, Holly Near singing Women, Sister, Woman, Sister. And thank you very much for listening.
Sister woman, sister, can you still feel any pain? Or have they robbed you of your anger while putting Thorazina in your vein? Sister woman, sister, have the walls grown up so high that you can't even dream of leaving and you've forgotten how to fly? Oh, sister woman, sister, did they take away your child and they locked her up in some juvenile hall to grow up weary and wild? Oh, sister woman, sister, they won't let me come and see you no more, but I still got the poem that you wrote me. It's hanging on my apartment door. It reads, a knock, but the door won't open. I seek, but I can't find you. I ask, but you can't hear me when I'm screaming.